protecting yourself from fake news. Hands-on with Canon's new full-frame mirrorless camera. And get a smart home theater with Polk's Command Bar. Live from the Twit Studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of the new Screensavers is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/NSS. Episode 173. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Rich DeMuro.
Leo is gone, obviously. So we get to stand in his space and sit in his chair and...
We're just like the kids playing when the parents are not home. You know what
true.
I mean?
Yes. So this is the show where we have fun talking about all the things that we're interested in technology. And we have some things that we're interested in talking about today. I think we have two... inventors, two young inventors who dropped out of college, but they're doing some amazing stuff to protect us from fake news, which is a term I don't like.
College is on hold.
Yeah, sorry.
It's on hold while they just, you know, get the startup kind of where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. I should probably silence my computer here. We're also going to talk about iPhones that were announced.
Big news this week. Mm-hmm. This is a good news week. Because think about it. I mean, you have a device that, I mean, what are they? They ship their 2 billionth iOS device. I mean, you've got a lot of people using these things, and this is the week when they announce the new ones.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of interest in that.
Do you use an iPhone, Rich?
I do, yes. No, I don't have it right here with me. I knew you were going to get me on that. Today I'm carrying the Note 9 and the iPhone 10. And so there's a little rivalry. Mm-hmm. The Note 9, you know, it's still holding... I do think let's put it this way. I think the new iPhones, these two, I don't think people decide anymore between them. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of people are just in their world. And most people I talk to, like when I first started reporting with tech, I'd be like, oh, switch to this or switch to that. But now I just feel like people just have what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with iPhones, the thing is when it breaks, they go in for the new one. They don't even kind of like consider it until they, unless you're a real techie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yes, I brought my Note 9 and my iPhone 10. And my regular watch.
I've been trying to... I just feel like there's no one out there that really doesn't prefer one to the other. And so you keep saying that you like
both. I do have
both.
My preferences.
You do?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Which is it?
I'll tell you. Here's the thing.
Okay.
Here's how I see iPhone versus Android. Android gives me 100% control over every single thing I want to do on my phone, right? If I want to change the theme, the background, the icon, the shortcuts, home screen shortcuts, want my icons in a weird little circle, and I want one on the home screen and three on the other... iPhone is amazing for content creation to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and simplicity. You know what I mean? Like, my mom is not going to sit there and arrange her icons in a weird U shape because she can on Android. You know what I mean? So, to me, it really comes down to that. And I think when I talk to a lot of people with iPhone versus Android, a lot of them, they've heard that Android is very complicated, so they don't want to deal with that. And with iPhone, it's just kind of de facto nowadays. Like, you get an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, you have to almost convince someone why they shouldn't get an iPhone, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless... you're on a budget, then it's easier to convince someone not to get an iPhone.
There's more choice with Android, especially when it comes to like, hey, my budget is $300.
Mm-hmm.
What can I get that's really good for that? And I think we have a mailbag question about that.
We do,
later
yes.
On,
we
so
are,
that'll be
yes.
interesting.
So we're also going to cover a sound bar that I tried. And we've got a lot of different things that we're going to be talking about. And we're going to talk about a mirrorless camera.
The Canon EOS R. And we also have in studio Robot Labs co-founders Ash Ba and Rohan Patay. They are going to talk about their tools to help protect you from fake news. And the latest being a browser extension that can spot a misleading or Photoshopped image using machine learning. So these are two hot topics, machine learning, artificial intelligence. I'm obsessed with that kind of stuff because it's very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I'm very curious to see what they've done over there.
I'm excited to talk to them. But we should talk about the Apple event, which you attended in the Steve Jobs circle and the round. They did not announce a round watch, as I hope.
Isn't that funny how that was like the big, there's my YouTube video that I was reading the comments on last night. So if you want to direct to my brain, just write something on that video and I will read it. Well, wow, look at this, a rare YouTube mishap. When has that ever happened?
Yeah, it's just there's too many people commenting.
Oh,
right
there's
now.
Too many people watching my video.
I'm sure that's
it. Is funny because you never know. So last year I did a video on the iPhone, the iPhone 10 for Facebook, 22 million views on that thing. That's insane.
Yeah.
Now this year, and it was, anytime you have something that changes that much, the interest was there. Right. You know, this year there was a lot of interest because people want to see what would change.
Yeah.
Not much changed. But the videos are still doing well, but not as much. At the event, this was the second event at the Steve Jobs Theater, which is an amazing place. I mean, we were there the second day after we were done shooting everything. We went back to do our live shots with TV news. You shoot your story, and then you go back and you present it, right? You know, you stand out there. Mm-hmm. From 4 a.m. when I got there until 10 a.m. when we were done, or the place opened about 9, they had people cleaning. And I'm talking the most detail-oriented company. It's just amazing to me. Like, it really is. Like, you don't see that anywhere else, you know? Anyway, that was a little personal of being there. It's just, it really is amazing, like, just the attention to detail that company has in every aspect of an event they throw or how they make their phones. It really does show.
Yeah, someday I hope to go to the Steve Jobs Theater. So, you know, maybe I could hold the camera next time for you or something.
You know, even my photographer's not allowed in, except at the part where he shoots the stuff. They don't let him into the presentation. It's very particular, you know. It's not just like with something like CES. They're like, oh, who are you bringing? I'm like, I sent them a list of like 15 people, like including like just random friends that want to go. Sorry, CES. No, I'm just kidding. I would never do that. But it's true. It's like all these other tech events. It's like the more the merrier. Mm-hmm. Apple is not like that. Like you're like, oh, and I'm bringing my photographer. They like vet him. Mm-hmm. Like, how long has he been shooting? What kind of camera does he use? Does he use an iPhone?
Exactly.
He's obsessed.
Or so you said. Okay, so let's talk about the phones that were announced. Mm-hmm. There was the 10S, the 10S X, S Max.
See, you already said X.
No, I said X.
This is the thing. Look at this. A seasoned pro, and you're saying X. Mm-hmm. I say X like half the time. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
But the naming conventions, the one we didn't say was the what? The
10R.
R, which is even more complicated. I think they should have gone with 10 Plus. Why does it need to be R?
Yeah.
Or, sorry, let's see. So not the R, instead of Max.
Yeah, Max.
It should have been, why does it have to be Max?
Because it's the biggest one ever.
But it's not. It's the same size as the 8 Plus.
No, it's bigger.
The screen is bigger.
The screen is bigger.
But the actual phone is like, I bet you a case from the 8 Plus will fit on the 10S Max.
Yeah. Well, it's a 6.5-inch screen.
Minus the cutout.
Yeah, it wouldn't fit because the cameras are different, right? The cameras go in a different way. So
yeah, but still, I'm just saying. You can, if you have a case from your old phone, just take a little scissor and cut the little.
Yeah.
Probably don't want to do that. All right, so.
I think they were trying to say, like, this is the biggest screen ever. And, you know, they have all kinds of marketing words for all this stuff. So, yeah, the 10S Max.
That's a 6.5-inch screen.
That is the one that I ordered. And so far, I'm not sure if I'm going to get it on launch day because I wanted the space gray, and my date is the 24th.
But they do that a lot, though, don't they? They kind of play. And I was reading like some blogs, and they're like, "Oh, if you haven't ordered, you better get it in now because you may not get it for weeks." Mm-hmm. They do that. When you're talking about a phone, especially, I mean, the Max, there, I could see how that one might take a little bit more to get. But if you're talking that the iPhone XS, which is in basically the same shell as last year's, there shouldn't be any production problems with that.
Right.
And then they, of course, play the game where the iPhone XR doesn't come out until later because if you're really anticipating a new phone, you kind of just jump and you're like, all right, look, I'll just get the new latest, greatest, and I'm not going to save the money on the XR. What do you think about the XR?
Well, first of all, I think that there was some news that came out. Maybe it was rumors, but that they really did have production problems with the screen, and that's why it's not out. They're not trying to pull some.
Oh, come on. LCD screens have been around forever. There is no, and it's not curved. There's nothing special. Like, if you look, one thing that's really interesting about this screen, on the 10R, if you look at the corners, you see that big, thick kind of black bezel around the whole thing? That is not what the iPhone XS looks like. So if you notice with the XS with the OLED screen, they really kind of turn the edges into like the edge of the phone. This one does have a very pronounced bezel around it. I don't know. I don't think there's any production delays with this device. I think it's just, it's marketing.
Yeah, but last year they came out with the cheaper version first, and then the 8 came out, and then...
But again, that was to build up interest because everyone wanted the new one.
Right.
Apple is very smart, and I would do the same thing. They're trying to get people to say, like, this is the latest, greatest. You know what? I'm thinking about going for that cheaper one, but this one's available right now. I don't want to wait. It's only $250 more. Let me go with the better one. So, I mean, it's all, you know, I think they have some pretty smart people thinking about this stuff.
I think they do. So the 10R, I think, is fascinating because really they're trying to get more people to buy a higher-end phone by making it slightly cheaper, right? So it starts at $749 or $745 or something, which isn't cheap, but it's cheaper than a $1,200 XS. So I think they're trying to bring it to more people who don't want to drop more than $1,000 on a phone, but they do want the newest.
And a big screen. So when you think about going into the store, and of course, your eyes are drawn to the XS Max, right? Mm-hmm. And you see that, and then your jaw drops at the $1,450 for that Max configuration. Mm-hmm. But then the Apple guy says, oh, by the way, you know, you can get, we have this thing in the corner, and he like blows it off with the dust. He's like, and he's like, this is only $750.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, that screen is just as big, and it looks just as good. Sold.
Right.
So I think that's part of it, is like you're still getting a really nice device. And the fact that they put the same camera, same processor, or very similar camera because it doesn't have a dual lens, but the same processor, it's almost like nearly the same specs, which I really got to give Apple credit for, because you would think they would have put last year's guts into this device. Mm-hmm. They didn't. So I think major props to them for actually giving us the best. But you're basically giving up on the screen and the build quality. But 99% of people are going to put a case on this thing anyway, so it's not going to matter that it's made from aluminum.
Right.
And it feels a little bit cheaper than the iPhone XS. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but you can't get a smaller 10R. There's no 10R that is hand size, small hand size.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people like the bigger screen because it feels more premium. Like, remember when you had a big screen phone, you were like, that's like driving like a Lexus down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, I got this phone. I think some people, and it doesn't feel too big, you know, even though it's kind of the size of the iPhone, the Plus of the old days.
It'll be interesting because I, you know, went from the Plus phones. I had the 6S Plus and the 7 Plus and the 8 Plus, and then I went down to the 10, and I really do like this size.
It is a great size.
But I wanted to get the, you know, biggest one because Leo is paying for it, so I figured I...
I get a phone for doing this today?
You get a phone, and you get a phone.
Everyone gets a phone.
Look under your seats, guys.
But the thing is, you don't think that that's a small screen until you compare it against other phones. And that's the thing. Most people are looking at their devices. Since we're in like a reviewer kind of position, you're seeing a lot of different things,
right.
You know, and you're seeing like you've got the small phone next to the big phone, next to the bigger phone.
Right.
But if you're just purchasing a phone and using it on a daily basis, everything adapts, you know, the way it feels in your hand, the way you see the screen. And it doesn't really, you don't notice a difference until you're with a friend and you see their phone. You're like, oh, that screen's a lot bigger.
Yeah.
You know, most people aren't just not doing that. You know.
So you have the Note 9 there, which is bigger than the XS. Do we have a camera here to look at these or no? And then I have my, one of my children was here earlier and left his SE, which they're not making anymore. So that is
the evolution.
That size.
I mean, look at this. So this screen, remember when that was big?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the evolution of the screens is pretty amazing. And here's the other thing that I've noticed as a reviewer is like when you first pick up a device, you know, it feels a certain way in your hand. Like this was like gigantic, you know, like the Note 9, let's say. And after you use it for a little, like a week or so, your muscle memory really does take over. Mm-hmm. And you kind of, now this is still tough to manage, you know, by trying to, you know, with one hand. But this, I do think, is probably the perfect size for the average person because pretty much every hand can fit this nicely. And you look at this, I mean, this is really, really super easy.
Yeah.
So I think that most people will probably be fine with the larger screen iPhone, like the fact that it's gotten a little bit bigger, because it's still manageable. And you're going to put a case on it, hopefully.
Yeah, and but I am going to miss the SE. Like, I think I just bought this year for both of my boys needed new phones, and it was just a great, it was a great phone for a kid. And, you know, that is kind of forgetful and we'll leave it around. And I looked to see if they had refurbished SEs on the Apple Store and they don't. They do have refurbished 7. But we're going to get to that later, too, when we're recommending reasonably priced phones.
They could surprise us. You never know. You never know. They could surprise, like, later in the year with, like, an SE. You know how sometimes Apple does things in two ways. They do the giant event where they have, you know, like, the pomp and circumstance. Then all of a sudden, one day, you're just like, oh, we have new MacBooks. And you're like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Or they just update the website, and it's like, oh, they're just there.
Right.
So maybe we'll have that. Can we talk about the eSIM?
Yes.
I think that, or the dual SIM, because I think this is really interesting, the fact that they're finally doing a dual SIM. It's funny because all these phone makers, they do these little things, and, you know, like the OnePluses of the world and the Huawei's and the Samsungs, but it doesn't sort of come to, like, the masses until Apple does it, and then it's like, okay, wireless charging is a thing, now dual SIM is a thing. I think that's a really interesting feature for them to build in. I know it's big in the other parts of the world, but, like, for the U.S., that's pretty big for people to have that available now.
Right. So if you have a work phone and a regular, like a work line and a regular line, you can use both of those. Or if you have an international line, or that's how you
travel a lot. Yeah. And the way they're doing it is it's not actually two SIM cards that you put into the phone. One's a SIM card, one's an eSIM, which I also think is brilliant because now you're a carrier and you might start advertising like, hey, why don't you activate that second line?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, use it for whatever. And, like, now it's a whole revenue stream. And I was actually thinking that Apple, I mean, you always hear these whispers about them becoming an MVNO, you know, and opening up their own wireless service. They could easily do that with the second line. Like, just start at, like, $10 a month and, you know, hey, add a second line to your iPhone for $10 a month, unlimited talk and text.
Yeah, that would be smart for them to do.
Could be interesting.
Yeah. And then we should talk about the Watch, too. Mm-hmm. Watch Series 4. There was the big thing, I think. Like, it goes to the corners, too, and has a larger screen, more screen area, not necessarily bigger. The Watch itself isn't bigger. I guess there was the smaller one.
2 millimeters, yeah.
Yeah.
They both got 2 millimeters bigger.
Yeah. So, but their
thinner.
Screen or the whole watch?
Well, it's now, instead of, it's 40 and, was it 40 and 44?
Right, right.
It used to be 38 and 42.
Right, okay.
So, and it does seem, it does look a little bit bigger. It doesn't feel bigger. Like, I had it on my wrist and it didn't feel bigger.
Yeah.
The screen definitely looks bigger because, you know, they play that game where they made it 2 millimeters bigger, but they also pushed the display out to all the way to the edges. Like, on your Apple Watch right now, you look, you don't really notice because most of the time it's kind of like black, like whatever around it.
Yeah.
But if you notice, if you ever have it full color with like a photo or something, you notice there's like a bezel.
Right.
Now it's kind of like that's almost gone.
Yeah. So I have the 44 now. I started the Series 0, I had the 38, and the battery was so, like, wouldn't even last throughout half the day. And so I upgraded to the 44, but I think I'm going to go back to the 40.
I think that's a good middle ground because my wife wears the same size you have, which is the 42, right?
Yeah, 42,
Yeah. And I feel like I feel like the other one is too small.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think now that they're doing like the 40, it's going to be like a perfect middle ground.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have like a huge wrist, you know what I mean? If you have a smaller wrist, it's a better size for that wrist versus the other one was like a little bit too small.
Yeah.
I think that the health features they built in is pretty amazing. Now, I know it's very expensive, the fall detection, which I think for the elderly, and it's not just elderly. I mean, everyone's saying, like, the elderly. But think about it. If you're, like, a hiker or someone that's, like, anyone that just you fall, you have a problem, whatever. And I was thinking even with, like, something like a car crash, you know, you become they sense with these algorithms that something happened, like, boom, they feel something, and then you don't move for 60 seconds. I mean, that could be applied to a wide variety of situations.
Yeah, I couldn't help but think of Sheryl Sandberg's husband who died from a fall and no one was there.
Exactly.
And, you know, that really does happen a lot. So I think it's great.
It's an expensive life monitor, but it's worth the life.
Right.
I mean, think about it. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, I need to get one of these for my mom. She lives alone. And, you know, it's like you just imagine, you know, like, what would happen if she fell? You know, and she can't. I set up a Google Home, so hopefully she would remember to call. But what if you couldn't?
Right.
You know? So I think that's a pretty amazing service. And Apple is really becoming a leader in health now. And if you look at them with the things they're doing with the iPhone, with the health kit, and now with the Apple Watch, I mean, all these Parkinson's things they've been doing with, like, the... I mean, it's really amazing. And nobody right now can match them.
Yeah.
you know, the other watches out there, the Fitbit's not even showing an interest in anything sort of like doctor related, you know?
Mm-hmm. The ECG stuff, I'm a little more suspicious of. Like, I was super excited when I saw the event, but then when I started to read into it, they have FDA clearance, but mm-hmm. not FDA approval, which is different. It's not like they didn't get FDA approval, but from when I read into it, it's a device like this wouldn't even, the FDA wouldn't even look at it for approval. They would just say, oh, okay, it's clearance. Is it where if it were, you know, pacemaker, that would need to be approved
okay.
because it's like you're really going to live or die based on the pacemaker. But the ECG is a little bit different. So it got clearance. It's okay. But I don't know. Like, last night I had a friend who's an emergency room doctor, and he was over, and I told him about it, and he was like, so, you know, you would know, like, it would call your doctor, but he wasn't that impressed with it, and he was a little bit wary of, well, are, you know, people going to be...
overconfident.
Or overconfident or constantly saying, like, I'm having a heart attack, you know, when they're really, like, you know, that was... I joked, like, I'm going to take my ECG all day long, like, because I can.
Well, and that's my other question. And I'm not really sure, but I've gotten a lot of emails and tweets from people that do have heart issues, mm-hmm. and they do think that this is a good thing. But again, a lot of it has to do with, like, what your doctor tells you. Like, I don't know... I'm not really sure because I don't know about the heart conditions that, like, require this. But the reality is, I'm guessing there's something out there that your doctor is like, look, you got to come in for an ECG every day or every mm-hmm. couple days or every week or every month or whatever it is. I'm just not clear on what the use case is for when you need to take an ECG yourself.
Right.
Like, are you just sitting there? You're like, let me just see how my heart's doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not clear to me. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that Apple's building this into this is a good step, no matter what. I mean, if it's... It's kind of like, you know, an oxygen sensor in, I think the Samsung phones might have an oxygen sensor for your fingertip, you know?
Yeah.
And there are times, and I can understand why you would need that, like if you have asthma. Mm-hmm. But again, you have like, you have a reason for that. Mm-hmm. You know, with the ECG, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think, but what else was interesting about it was, were you part of the Apple Health study? Did you sign up for that, where you, if you had a watch, mm-hmm. you could just, it was an app that you downloaded. It was the Apple Health study, and it was, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And you didn't have to do anything. All you had to do was have an Apple
Give
Watch.
All your data over to Apple. No big deal. Just give all your vital signs to Apple for 3 to 4 months.
Yes, exactly. Well, we're sort of already doing that. But, no, I thought it was, I want to be part of health research if I can. You know,
sure.
I didn't have to do anything. But, yes, they did give away, I did give away some of whatever it was. But that's the research that they used to get the FDA clearance.
Oh. Oh, okay.
From that study. So they, you know, they had people who had AFib or arterial, whatever it is.
Atrial fibrillation.
Yes.
It's such a tough word to say.
Atrial fibrillation, yes.
Because then you have the defibrillator, which they put
which
in places.
Different. Right.
Which is different than atrial fibrillation.
And when we were talking, doing the announcement, I thought it was a defibrillator in the Apple Watch, and I thought that would be amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
If you were just
that
carrying
would be
around
crazy.
A defibrillator.
If you have a short circuit, like if Samsung made it, it might have been.
Yeah,
Oh, that's not nice.
That isn't nice. But, yeah, so they use that research to be able to give this information to the FDA and now.
See, I love, and I was kind of being facetious about giving away your data, but that's what I love about the fact that these companies, they're in a very interesting place right now. They're collecting so much data from us, the Fitbits of the world, the Apple Watches of the world, maybe Samsung Galaxy kind of watch or whatever. But the reality is they're finding it tough to figure out what they want to do with it mm-hmm. because it puts the public in a weird place. Like when they start, they can slice and dice your data from your heart like a million different ways, or you know, your activity and all this stuff. They don't really want to come out with a lot of those studies, mm-hmm. I feel like, because people get spooked.
Right.
And we're in this stage right now where we're just starting to accept this stuff. Mm-hmm. And with the Apple Watch, I mean, you're talking the heart, the electronic heart monitor that they're putting on there now is like way better than the last one.
Right.
It's like kind of interesting because now you're getting into like much richer information about mm-hmm. people. And so anyway, I feel like they're in a tough place right now because they're sitting there like in their boardrooms. They're like, we have some really interesting info. But how do we go about this where we can make sure we use it in a good way mm-hmm. and get people on board without everyone saying, ah, no way, I'm not wearing an Apple Watch anymore because I didn't know you were doing that with it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a tricky place to be. So anything else from the event that we didn't cover?
Let's see. We did the eSIM. I thought that was interesting. The camera, I'm really curious about the camera because the iPhone camera is amazing, but there are points when it doesn't work as well as some of the other cameras out there, especially mm-hmm. like the low light kind of issues. I wish they would have improved the selfie camera because in low light, selfies are pretty bad on the iPhone. I read that they changed the sensor, like actually how much light it's sort of bringing in for the first time in a while. So they did mention that in their materials. So I hope that the low light photography has gotten a little bit better. And they always say, like Apple always says, we made the camera better. But the HDR thing, the super HDR, where they're merging the data from a bunch of different pictures, mm-hmm. is really interesting to me. Because that's kind of what, well, that is basically what the Google Pixel does. And if the iPhone is doing that now, that'll be really cool. The one thing that Apple does at the event where they have it, the lighting is perfect. Mm-hmm. So you take any picture at the Apple event, like you're just like, oh, I want to just see what this looks like. Yeah. It's always perfect.
Yeah.
So you have to wait till you get the camera in real world circumstances to kind of see how it performs. And I would say the iPhone, out of every camera I've ever tested, like on a phone, is always, you take a picture, it's going to look good 99.9% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, with Samsung, it's like really good sometimes, and other times you're like, what just took this picture?
Yeah.
You know, OnePlus, same thing. It's like great pictures a lot of the time, sometimes in certain conditions, not so good. But iPhone consistently is like, just like the average person, you give them an iPhone, it's like, oh, takes a really good picture,
right,
for most situations.
And Alex Lindsay, who we talked about the event, and he pointed out in some of those photos when they're showing the bokeh effect, you know, the blurry background, and he pointed out how many of those photos where someone was wearing a hat, or not that photo, but because there's blurring at the edges. And yeah. So they took so many pictures of people wearing hats so that you wouldn't see the blurring at the edges.
Oh, yeah, see, another little trick.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think the bokeh looks pretty good. Like, I get it. People are always like, oh, the bokeh. Like, you could see his arm is a little bit not as blurred. Like, it still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
If you're not inspecting the bokeh,
yeah,
like, it's still pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And it's a cool effect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, if you're posting to Instagram, if you want a professional bokeh picture, like, you're going to have to take it with a professional camera, and we'll talk about that later. You know, get a $2,000 camera.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're taking this from your phone in, like, 2 seconds when your kid stopped for 1 second to take a picture.
Right.
And it's, like, this amazing blurry background that you can now adjust the intensity of. Still pretty good mm-hmm. for, you know, what we have. And, yes, you're always going to find the little... You're not Photoshopping it. So,
right.
I mean, the edges are not going to be perfect. It's a computer figuring this out.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of fancy cameras, should we move on to the talk about fancy cameras? Richard Butler is here. He is from DP Reviews, and apparently Canon has jumped on the full-frame mirrorless bandwagon with the Canon EOS. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
You have that camera right there.
I have, yeah. I've been shooting with it for about 2 weeks now, pretty much since it was announced. So, I'm pretty up to speed on it by now.
What do you think of the bokeh effect on the iPhone versus what you can achieve on this? You know, we always see these, like, little blog posts and stuff. It's like, we gave the Sports Illustrated photographer an iPhone to take pictures for the magazine. Like, I mean, you still get better pictures out of one of these expensive cameras.
Absolutely. I mean, the power that... a phone like an iPhone puts into your hand is incredible. And those images, you know, as you say, you know, if you post them on social media, they look great. Nobody's going to look in super close detail. But it's still simulated. It's still, you know, an algorithm sort of adding blur to the back of your images. Whereas, you know, if you're shooting on something like this, particularly with this lens, which has a very wide aperture and there's a big sensor behind it, you know, the actual bokeh is smooth and it has, you know, character depending on which lens you use. It's not quite the same thing.
But can you adjust it after you take the picture? Let's answer the tough questions here.
No, it's a feature of the physics of light. It's the way it is. And that's what photography is about for me.
You just get one shot and that's it. No adjusting later on. No clicking that little edit button on the iPhone.
So if it's the physics of photography, then how did Apple fool physics? Is that the headline here? Or you mean real photography?
I mean, so what Apple are doing is they're simulating the effect. They're using, you know, a blur, and they're using, almost certainly they're using computational photography to understand what the bokeh would look like with a real lens with a big camera, and then trying to simulate that into your image. You know, and they do it very well. But I really enjoy the process of taking photographs. I really enjoy setting up my camera, to choose how shallow or deep I want my depth of field at the point where I take the photo, not sitting around idly later going, oh, how would this look? You know, I enjoy taking photos for the sake of taking photos.
Tell us about this camera. It's a full-frame mirrorless camera. What does that mean?
So we'll start with the mirrorless bit. You know, Canon is the fourth company to introduce a full-frame mirrorless system. And it's significant because they're the world's biggest DSLR maker. And in a DSLR, you have a mirror redirecting light as it comes through the lens, redirecting light through an optical viewfinder. Whereas with a mirrorless camera, as the name implies, you take the mirror out and you let the light go straight onto the sensor. And instead, you have an electronic viewfinder showing you the light as it hits the sensor. So you're seeing the image you're actually going to take rather than just seeing roughly what the camera will get to see.
So,
and full frame means quite simply that it uses a sensor that's the same size as a piece of 35mm film was in the pre-digital era.
And just a question, like logistically speaking, because this has no mirror on it, when you take that lens off, are you like literally like if you put your finger in there, would you be like touching the sensor? Like, isn't that like leave it open to like?
It means you can get dust on it. Actually, with the Canon, it's the only one where you don't just see the sensor by default. When the camera's turned off, they bring the shutter blades down. But any other mirrorless camera, you'll tend to see the sensor just exposed there.
So but you gotta be careful.
Well, yes and no. Bear in mind, a sensor will have a chunk of glass in front of it, which will have things like an infrared cut filter and possibly an anti-aliasing filter. You know, there's something protecting the sensor. You're okay. Not going to be sticking your finger onto the silicon. But at least with bringing the shutter down, that keeps dust out.
Is mirrorless better than DSLR?
Oh, that's a controversial one.
And also, is Apple better than Android? Answer both.
I'm going to go with
Megan now. Has her standard questions for anyone that she's talking to that always need to be answered.
I'm on safer territory going near the DSLR one.
Okay.
It's to a degree, it's a matter of taste. In terms of performance, they're now getting to the stage where there's, you know, increasingly little difference between them in terms of autofocus. But mirrorless cameras, because they're not having to flip a mirror out of the way, they can now tend to shoot faster. The Sony A9 can shoot at something like 20 frames a second. But also, it means you get a seamless experience, whether you're shooting stills or video. So in a DSLR, when you're shooting stills, you're looking past this mirror. And it's having to flip out of the way each time it takes an image. But for video, it's got to lock that mirror up. And it means you get a completely different shooting experience depending on whether you're shooting video through the back of the camera or stills through the viewfinder. On this, it's the same experience. Yes. And for me, that's quite a big advantage.
So videos or stills, same experience?
Absolutely, yeah. And on this camera, and you know, Nikon released a full-frame mirrorless camera about 2 weeks ago. And Sony's been producing full-frame mirrorless cameras for 5 years now. So it's on its third iteration. So, you get very similar autofocus performance in both stills and video, which is something that hasn't been the case up until now.
So how is the performance? I mean, you shot with this thing. What do you think of it?
I'd say it's pretty good.
Oh, wow.
You know, at the risk of damning with faint praise, the sensor in it is very much like the one in the Canon EOS 5D Mark IV, which is it takes great still images, but its video is perhaps not quite up to the same standard. There's a significant crop on the video, so you're not using the whole sensor, and it was somewhat plagued by rolling shutter. And this is a pretty similar story with this one. I love the still images. I've actually rather enjoyed shooting with it, but I'm a bit disappointed by the video.
Hmm. What's the deal with the lens? Like, is like the mount different or something?
So yeah, taking out that mirror means that you can move the mount much closer to the sensor, and that means, for instance, on this lens, and this is the 28-70mm f/2. This is a $3,000 lens. It's lovely. It's quite big. But you can have I don't know if you can see that. You can have a huge glass element very close to the sensor itself. And Canon tells us, you know, in as much as you can trust what you're told by manufacturers, Canon tells us that putting a large glass element very close to the sensor allows you to create all sorts of lens designs they couldn't with their DSLR system. And Nikon is saying very much the same thing. They've taken the same approach, you know, a very wide lens mount very close to the sensor, and this allows them to make much more ambitious lens designs than they could before. And if they're both saying it, there's probably something to it.
Do you have a preference between the Nikon and the Canon? I don't know.
That's
I'm very
like
competitive.
Android versus iOS in the camera world.
All these controversial questions.
I know.
All fighting words.
Something has to win always. That's my way.
I've not shot with both of them enough to really have formed a preference. We're in the process of reviewing both cameras at the moment. There's definitely, you know, there's pluses and minuses to each. I'm not quite ready to answer that question. In the coming weeks, we'll have a review, and then you can see, you know, our collected, considered opinion. But for now, I'd say, you know, there are things to like and slight letdowns in both cases.
Who do you like better, me or Rich?
That's an easy one.
Do you like the new screensavers better or the old screensavers?
So does this mean that DSLRs are going the way of the Betamax? Like, are they over? Is full-frame mirrorless the way we're headed?
I think it is probably the way we're headed long-term. They're not going anywhere soon. I mean, all the world's best press cameras are DSLRs. You know, the Canon 1DX Mark II, the Nikon D5. These are the things that are lining up alongside the touchline in sports games all over the world. It's going to take a while for mirrorless to really push that away. So in the short term, no. In the long term, I think you have to assume this is the way the market's going. But I don't think it's necessarily going the way of Betamax. I'd say that DSLRs are probably going the way of vinyl. There'll always be some people who love shooting that way, who want to sort of feel part of the scene in the way that you do when you're looking through an optical viewfinder and you're actually seeing the scene through the lens. There'll always be some people who want that, and particularly Canon and Nikon, I think, will always try to cater to that market.
Is there any sound when you hit the shutter? Because there's nothing that kind of flips?
Well, on this camera, there is. There's still a mechanical shutter because most modern sensors still, or sensors this big, aren't fast enough for you to be able to use turning them on and turning them off as a shutter.
Okay.
It does have a fully silent mode, but just like I said, there was rolling shutter in video. It takes some time for that electronic, you know, readout to work its way down the sensor. And so you potentially get some slight distortion in your images if you use the fully electronic shutter mode. So it's only really the Sony Alpha 9 that comes anywhere close to being able to completely do away with the mechanical shutter.
So this is a $2,300 camera plus, yep, that, you know, you said the lens you're using is $3,000. So this is a very costly investment. Who is this for?
Well, I think very few people who buy this particular camera body will then pair it with this lens. I think this lens says a lot about Canon's ambition for the system. I'm sure we'll see a body that makes much more sense with a $3,000 constant F2 zoom. There is a smaller lens, which sadly one of my colleagues is shooting with at the moment, which is 24 to 105mm f4, which is actually ends up being a really lovely, flexible, sort of travel-appropriate lens. And that's much more reasonably priced. It means you get the body and the lens for something around, I think it's $3,100, $3,200. And that's comparable to the amount you'd spend if you were buying a full-frame DSLR with a good lens. So it's costly, but that's the sort of amount of money you'd expect to pay for a good camera and a good lens with a full-frame sensor. So this is really an enthusiast level camera. It's for people like me, really. You know, not professionals necessarily, but people who care about their photography enough to really, you know, spend some money on their hobby, spend the money on the thing they enjoy doing because they really want the quality that a full frame sensor gives.
So when is it available?
I believe it's available next month. I think the body is October, and the 24-105 lens I was talking about is October. And then I think this lens is coming in December. So it's all the four lenses they've announced are coming in the next couple of months. But the body is available next month.
So if I'm taking pictures of my kids trick or treating next month, do I get this camera with the $3,000 lens, or do I just use like the iPhone?
It depends. If you're, you know,
do I buy this for the trick or treating night, or what? Do I just plunk down the cash?
Yes.
I wouldn't. I'm not sure that would be the best use of your money. It would take some great photos. If you've decided you want to take photos of trick or treating, and then you're really interested in photography, and you want to take your photography further than your iPhone's going to let you, you want to have more control, and you want that image quality as opposed to a simulation of it, then yeah, you should certainly have a look at a camera or one like, you know, this camera or one like it. But you know, it has to be said, your iPhone's going to do a pretty good job, and your kids aren't going to be intimidated by you running around with this following them.
Be scary though.
So. Yeah. And can I immediately post those pictures on Instagram with that camera?
I wouldn't say instantly. It's got Wi-Fi built in. Oh. You can. It's somewhat easier to transfer them to Android than it is to iOS. But that's a much longer conversation about iOS.
Oh, I'm happy to talk about that.
But yes, you can Wi-Fi them to your phone, and then you can use Snapseed or whatever editing software you prefer to use, and you can post them from there. And actually, Canon is introducing an app. They already have an app for transferring images, but they're introducing a mobile version of Digital Photo Professional, their raw processing software, to allow you to sort of tweak and optimize your image on your iPad, on your iPhone. And that's, I'm not sure if it's available yet, but it's coming soon.
Well, Richard, thank you so much. Richard Butler is a technical editor at DP Reviews. You can check out his review of this, and then apparently soon what he thinks of this compared to the Nikon, the Canon versus the Nikon. It's dpreviews.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
So we're going to talk to a startup that is working on ways to fight fake news, and they're here. But first, I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor of this show, WordPress. I have my site. I use WordPress for MeganMaroney.com, also for GoatsWearingClothes.com. I have both of those websites. And I love having a place online that I can call my own, that people, when they look for me, they can hopefully find that first. And WordPress helps me do it. And I don't have to spend a ton of time thinking about design. And if something goes wrong, then they are there. They have a lot of great service where they can help me with things when things go wrong. I don't have to worry about security either, because they take care of all of that. They can take care of the hosting, and they can take care of the templates, and they have so many of them, so your website doesn't have to look like everyone else's website. You can turn your vision into a reality. All you have to do is launch your website on WordPress.com. You can choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision and establish your brand, no matter how much design experience you have. It is hassle-free. WordPress takes care of the hosting, security, and software updates, so you can focus on your site. Upload images, video, audio, and more, plus import and export content to and from your WordPress website. It's your site. It's your home. It's your content. No limits. Grow your audience and reach new customers with built-in SEO, social media features, and marketing tools. That's what I was talking about before. So that is the first place people will find you when they look for you. That's what you want. With the WordPress app, you can manage your site on the go, and you can launch your website with confidence, knowing you can get help from a 24/7 support team when you need it. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month, and 31% of all websites run on WordPress. Right now, get 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to wordpress.com/NSS to create your website. That's wordpress.com/NSS for 15% off your new website, your new home on the web, wordpress.com/NSS. And we thank WordPress for their support of this episode of the new Screensavers.
All right, Robot Labs recently launched their latest solution to help stop fake news. SurfSafe, which uses machine learning to help you spot Photoshopped or misleading images with a browser plugin. Joining us to talk about it are returning guests of the TWiT Network. Thanks so much for being here. Co-founders Ash Bhatt and Rohan Patay. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah.
So, Megan, you tried this out.
I did, and it is amazing. So I should say that we talked to Ash and Rohan on Tech News Today about their first product, which was amazing, and that detected bots. And I loved it, so I was so excited to hear about this. If I had like a little bit of a learning curve, like a tiny bit of a learning curve, because I didn't really understand what it does. So, Ash, why don't you explain first like what it's supposed to do, and then we can talk about how it does that.
Yeah, definitely. So when we look at the problem of fake news, there are so many different issues. It's a massive issue in itself. And so we've been trying to solve small little issues here and there. So first off, amplification. We looked at bots. We were like, hey, we're going to build out a simple tool to empower users so that when they're on Twitter, if they're talking to a bot, they should know. And in the same way, we started looking at the problems around actual content and misinformation there. And we realized that one of the big issues that exists today is that there's so much information that it's impossible to keep track of what's real and what's fake. We should all be reading groups like Snopes. We should be looking at these fact checkers, but it's just so much to ask, right? There's just so much information. And so our whole philosophy was, let's just take that experience and make that so much simpler. Let's make it so that you hover over an image and we give you that information. And so that's sort of been the philosophy around SurfSafe. We're like, hey, let's take the stuff that we should be doing and then package it into a very simple extension. And that's what we've launched.
So you install the extension, and then can I just hover over any image or what? Can you give us kind of a... Do you have it hooked up here?
Yeah, it's hooked up here.
Let's see. Let's give us a little demo here.
Yeah, so you can...
I'm on Twitter.
Yeah. So as you look at this image here, there's a there's this very extreme tweet where they're talking about a NFL player protesting with a burning flag. And so with SurfSafe, you can hover over the image, and it essentially gives you an indicator here. You can click that. And in a couple seconds, it actually shows you where the images have been seen.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So you can actually jump in here and see the different instances. It's been fact-checked. It's also been tweeted out by the Seattle Seahawks. You can check that. Our philosophy here is that instead of pointing out and saying, hey, this is fake news, we want to give you the different sources. We want you to come to that conclusion and say, hey, here are the 12 different places. If you want, you can read the Snopes article on it as well and just look at the fact check, right? And so, for example, you can go in here and read Snopes' long-form analysis of why this is fake. But that's how we've sort of looked at this problem. We know that there are a lot of different definitions for fake news itself. And so as opposed to tackling the classification by itself, we were like, hey, let's give you the information and make that very, very simple for you to see.
So if you're just listening to this, what we're seeing is the photoshopped image of you were able to show the real image, which is just the football player in the locker room, and then the photoshopped image had the burning flag that someone added there.
Right.
And so when you set this up, which is interesting to me, is you just install the add-in to your browser, and then you get to choose the sources. So
I was going to ask about that. Like, where do you pull these sources from?
Yeah, is it easy to uninstall and reinstall and show the process? Because that is what I was like, oh, okay. It's not saying like, oh, here are your sources. Everyone believes that the New York Times is the best source for everything. Right. It's not that. It's like there's a list of sources. Mm-hmm. There's Fox News. There's Breitbart. I mean, let's take a look and see what happens when you install it.
And so when you install, one of the first screens you see is your this option to select safe sources. So we, having built products in this space, we've talked to a lot of users from all across the political spectrum. And one thing we're adamant about is that we're nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. And the way for us to do that in a way that our algorithms themselves are not biased is let you decide what our algorithms are based on. So based on that, we took the top 40 news organizations by Alexa rank and then listed them here. And you can choose what organizations you trust. If you trust CNN, you can choose that. If you trust Fox News, you can choose that as well. And based on this, we actually come to the different classifications that we show our users. So, for example, let's say you trust something on CNN. CNN has written an article about how something is fake. We'll actually bring that up to you at the top and say, hey, a trusted source has actually shown that this content is actually fake news, and you should go in and read that. Mm-hmm. But that's the big reason why we've decided to... go with safe sources. And then going back to our bot check, the only actual check that we have to let you use our product is checking that you're not a robot. And we believe that this is so important, especially considering that a lot of the issues that have come up around fake news. These Facebook ads that have been polarizing our country have come around people selling ads against users. So we actually have almost no information on you, in the sense that all you essentially tell us that is that you're not a bot, and you essentially are able to use our service.
Mm. I love this. So does it work on, it works on any image on the web?
Yeah, so basically you install the extension, and it runs on any image that you see. So if you hover over any image on any website, we have indicators that allow you to like look at an image, for example, like if there's a warning associated with it, if it's been fact-checked before, or in an instance where you can just hit the basically a magnifying glass icon, and that will show you all the instances we've seen that image across the internet. So that way you can cross-reference the sources yourself.
Now, a lot of these things, when they kind of go viral, they haven't really been seen before. So how does your software kind of do that? Like, let's say it's a new image. Does it take a while for it to kind of percolate and, like, get through the system?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
so one of the amazing things about misinformation is that it specifically targets certain demographics. So you and I won't fall for the same misinformation. It'll essentially look for different biases that we have. And so based on that, for example, when I'm going through Facebook, there are all these satire pages that often spread misinformation. And the thing is, looking at this, I know that the Justice Department hasn't actually fined the NFL $500 million. And because of that, I can actually report this and essentially tell SurfSafe that I think this is misleading. I can hit report, and we actually use that to essentially be able to understand what sort of pieces of misinformation are flowing. And our users, our community of SurfSafe users, are actually the ones that inform us in terms of being able to see where fake news is spreading, which essentially lets us see fake news as it starts going viral before it really gets caught.
Do you have to have a human on your end, or is this AI that you're using to, once that's reported, what's happening with that?
Yeah, so we have filters as well as a human process. But that being said, again, we don't actually make the classifications around what's fake news or not. We just give you more sources. And so one of the products we're looking at in terms of in our pipeline is a product called factcheck.me for news organizations, such that we can actually present pieces of information that people are presenting as fake news or reporting to us as fake news, and so that we can actually give out a report of what's been reported to news organizations so that they can themselves go out and fact check and provide the service for other users.
So earlier this week on Tech News Weekly, we were speaking to someone from the EFF about how difficult it is for AI to work in situations when someone's trying to figure out someone's political leaning. Mm. So we were talking about YouTube doesn't know, for example, what fair use is. So it can't, you know, if I'm showing a picture of Trump, it doesn't know that I'm using that. It doesn't really know what my political leanings are or anything. It's hard to teach an AI that, like, so I like that this is specified to just the image.
Right.
So if I were writing an article about that image and how it was fake and how he wasn't really burning the flag, my content wouldn't be judged as fake news, correct? It would just be the image that
right.
was, okay.
So the other thing that we find super fascinating is that an article that misrepresents the image, by definition, is going to be misinformation. And so the reason why we're looking at images is it's from a informing the user standpoint, it's so cut and clear. We give you 12 sources and say, hey, we're not going to tell you that this is fake news, but we're going to show you. And that's sort of the philosophy that we've had.
Now, I've heard that you can just take an image and drag it into like Google image search, and you kind of get like, you know, you see where that's appeared before. How is this different? What level of intelligence are you applying that that's not?
Yeah, so one thing that we do that Google image search can't do is we're actually able to reference Photoshopped images. So, for example, on the screen here, there's a picture of I think this is Bane from one of the Batman movies. But as you can see here, when we actually analyze this image, we actually get the original image that this is from. And so one of the cool things that we do that Google Images doesn't do is that we're able to reference these images.
So they just find similar images.
Right.
They're
yeah.
not going to find images that are like the original that was doctored.
Yeah, what actually Google does is that they actually look at the image, they look at the different objects in the image, and then basically give you like almost a actual web search for it, and then finds you images of that. So oftentimes if you'll give it a image of a flower, they'll find you visually similar other flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's cool, you can get information like that, but you don't see exactly the other sources where the exact image, or example if it's from a protest or something like that, where the other places where that image is.
And on top of that, the other thing is there are so many things that we should be doing. We should be Google searching images. We should be fact-checking images. But the problem is there's so much information these days that I can't fact-check every single image. Mm-hmm. And so our philosophy is like, hey, let's just reduce the friction so much that just your computer does it automatically for you.
And there's always that like party pooper on Facebook who like posts the Snopes article, and you're like, oh, why do you have to ruin it for everyone?
Like, that puppy and the pony are not really best friends. So this is totally free. How are you going to make money?
Yeah. Great question.
You ask such tough questions. Why do they need to think about this?
It's true.
Well, I guess the way our philosophies when it comes to this is that we should be aligning our users' incentives with how we monetize. So, for example, our users want us to fight back against fake news. And so when we look at avenues to monetize, we're looking at things like looking at providing data to ad providers so that they can be like, this is telling ad providers that, hey, we know what is being reported as fake news. Use that in terms of what ads you're able to run and not run. Or going to media organizations and being like, hey, your images are being misrepresented. These are different avenues that we're looking at monetization, but we want to monetize in a responsible way where we actually help the issue as opposed to propagate it further.
And Rohan, I know you both were at Berkeley, and you met at Berkeley, right? Or did you meet before?
We're actually childhood friends, actually.
Oh. Yeah.
Which is pretty insane.
So we went to middle school together, and then high school together, and then we're freshman year roommates.
Were you part of the first startup, too?
I was not,
no.
So I only dropped out once. This guy dropped out twice. He can tell you about that.
So you started a company, you started your first company when you were 14.
Yeah, when I was 14. Yeah, that's right.
That's very young.
Well, he's still very young.
He's only like 17. So.
Yeah. So you left. I mean, I would assume you sort of have to get on this now. It's changing so fast. I mean, when we talked about botcheck.me, that was before Twitter removed all those bots, right? I mean, that was before a lot of people really understood how many bots were on Twitter.
Right. The crazy thing, I mean, the philosophy that we have is these big tech companies, because they're so big, they move a little bit slower than a startup like we can. And our philosophy is that, hey, there's so many people that see this as a big issue and want to do something about it. And our way of helping that is empowering them by building tools that they can just download and start taking action on their end. And in terms of bot check, in the past year, over 60,000 users have classified over a million suspicious accounts, which is insane when you think about how just we're just two students, right? I like all of that is our users. Like all of the crazy stuff that we've been able to be a part of is because of the people that have used us.
And I could also see, I know you guys are, you know, the money thing, but I could see companies, you can either do this as a subscription, you know, if you're a newsroom, like before we air a product, you know, we want to fact check it through the, you know, run it through this service.
Right.
It could be built into a product. I mean, obviously a company like Facebook might be interested in this technology to, you know, automatically add this into images. Obviously, these are all things you guys have thought of. you know what I mean? There's like a lot of different ways this can go. Clearly, you have it as a user end thing, but this can be built into a lot of products too.
Right, right. And we're looking at a lot of these avenues. We're talking to a lot of different groups. And at the end of the day, this is, for us, this is also a passion project in the sense that we see misinformation as being one of the biggest problems of this next generation. And we want to make sure that we have our way of having an impact so that this problem isn't as big as it could be.
What got you interested in that? I mean, is it just being online, seeing what's going on out there, or what got you kind of into this realm?
Yeah, I think it's a culmination of a lot of different things. So for one, we go to Berkeley, and like being at Berkeley, we're often either made like online. There's so much fake news that spreads about our university. We had Milo Yiannopoulos, who's a conservative speaker, come and speak on campus. And then all of a sudden, we started seeing all these pieces of information floating around about how students were paid protesters. And we're like, we wish we were paid, right? Like, so, like, we've experienced this firsthand.
Can we swear on the show?
I'm sorry about that.
We just did.
We just lost our FCC license. Thank you all.
He didn't swear. That's fake news.
Yeah, but being at Berkeley,
you
right?
really
yeah.
have passion for it. Yeah. If you're going to use it in a, you know, for something you're passionate about.
But yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then even then, we just started building projects in our apartment. We were literally in the living room together, just like hacking on some projects, coding some stuff, seeing what we could do. One of the first things that we did was just building presidential actions, which is
basically an app that just looked at White House, the whitehouse.gov, and basically informed users what the president, what actions were like the White House was taking, what actions was your government taking, and how you could reach out to your local representative. And even that got like a good amount of reach then.
Yeah. And who's doing the website design? Who's like creating these? Because these sites they're very beautiful. Like it's a good design.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that was just something that I guess back when we launched this put together, like a couple days before launch, we were like, shoot, we have to like get this done. But yeah, it was building these products and building this company has been an insane experience just because of how central this has been to like. We started working on bots, and then all of a sudden people were talking about Russia bots, right? And as a byproduct of that, so many users just start using our products, and we just start hearing like feedback from everyone from political organizations to big companies to users, and it's been just an insane journey of being tossed into the center of this crazy time we're in.
I want to know what the biggest challenge has been, because, I mean, it seems like you're everything that you're doing is like very relevant for today's day and age. Mm-hmm. But have you met like a challenge, like, or you know, are there people that don't like what you're doing?
Oh yeah, when working in since we're working on a problem around bots, there's so many times when I'll just have to delete the Twitter app just because my phone just starts getting bombarded with like thousands of tweets. There have been writers who've written about us and then have had to delete their Twitter apps on their phone just because all of a sudden these bots start like just tweeting at them. So that might happen to you guys. I don't know. But
I would love like anyone to
fair warning. Right before.
One tweet reply would be nice.
But things like that have been like it's weird, right? Like on one end, it's a little bit scary, but on the other, it just shows that we're striking a chord with different groups. Yeah.
Do you think the election could be changed with these bots? Like, do you think this is a thing we need to worry about for the next go around?
Yeah. In terms of this being a problem, like we've sort of seen this firsthand multiple different times. So for example, after the Parkland shootings, for example, we saw bots actually tweeting out about gun control on both sides of the debate. So like very left-leaning tweets as well as right-leaning. Whereas like there were tweets that organically were popping up like around mental illness that weren't getting as much exposure because of these bots actually driving the conversation. Mm. And so we've seen these things firsthand. It's been something that has had a lot of coverage. And it's been crazy for us as well, just having a product in this space and seeing the data just come in like firsthand.
It's so interesting because you know with this whole bot kind of thing is like they build these systems, you know, like the Facebooks and the Twitters, and like
right. These
smart people sit there and they say, well, how can we manipulate that, you know, and how can we like even like trending terms on Twitter? You just think like, okay, whatever. Like if you know a company wants to promote a trending term, it shows up there. But hold on, what if I don't want that promoted logo on there and I just want to do it organically
right. By
creating an army of bots. I mean, that's something that, like, when you think about the layers of sophistication of these systems, is pretty crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely diving in deeply into a bot check, we saw different ways of creating that bot network. You could buy accounts on, like, the quote-unquote black market, and you could just build your own army. And it was really easy to automate. There's a lot of these tools out there that allow you just to automate hundreds or thousands of these bots. And suddenly you can grow your brand organically, or you can grow whatever
organically.
Organically.
Right. I mean, it's... Like, you think about that, like, that if you're a brand, like, this can be used. I mean, we think about the fake news and stuff, but, like, as a brand, you might be interested in some of these tools that are kind of bad for other uses, you know?
Yeah, one of the craziest things that we came across was that seeing all these bots, we're like, how expensive would it be to, like, buy a few accounts, right? So we go on, we go to a black hat site, and we're just talking to random people. We come across this guy, I think his name was Rick or something like that. He's like, I'm selling accounts. So we email him, and then we're like, how much are you selling them for? It's like $4.50. And so you can, and we got these accounts. We start looking at them. We realize they're just compromised accounts. Mm-hmm. Like they're accounts with like full names, like emails, like.
With followers too.
Yeah, with
in
followers.
Actual networks.
Like these people could have been like your high school friends, right?
Oh, yeah.
That have just like not stopped using their accounts, gotten them hacked, and then their passwords changed.
Yeah, my account was compromised for a while because like when I had little kids, I was like, Twitter was the last thing I was doing. And then all of a sudden I started to see tweets that it was like just, yeah, it was not me.
You
I
didn't
got
have
it
your
back.
Two-factor on back then?
No, it was 2013. No,
yeah.
I didn't. So you used earlier the word amplification, like being the problem, which I think is key to this because I think most people in the world are good, but the people who are not are very loud, and technology makes them even louder. And so do you think that Twitter and Facebook have gotten better at managing that sort of amplification from your perspective?
It's a game of cat and mouse. So like Twitter and Facebook, to give them credit, like this is one of their big problems as well, right? So they've been Twitter in particular has been working nonstop, but at the same time, this is a group where the other group is also working on technology, and so we constantly see different things happening where like the tweeting behavior that we saw a year ago is very different from bot behavior today. And that's also why we've also advocated for other groups to start getting into this issue and start working on this problem, just because it's a problem with a lot of different actors, and it's a problem that needs to be solved.
And every time someone changes something, the guys on the other side figure out, well, let's go to plan B and C and D. I mean, it's not going to stop ever.
Right.
There's always going to be something that's next level.
And when you talk about bot behavior being different, you're talking about on the like a massive scale. You couldn't tell me like bots do this and bots do that, could you?
I guess I can give you a couple of things. But that being said, like on a whole, this is an evolving problem. But for example, like we used to see bots just retweet content, and now we're seeing bots that are essentially taking, for example, so that they don't get flagged by Twitter, they'll just start posting news articles, posting the exact title of the news article as well as a link. And it looks a lot more like a posted tweet. Uh-huh. And so there's behaviors like that that have been changing over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm. In my house, the bots clean the floors. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good
this is a good kind of bot.
Yeah. I'm not reprogramming them anytime soon. I'm
not all bots are bad. You know?
Yeah. I'm not putting a stop to that bot army. They just march in, like, we're cleaning.
Yeah. That's true. Some just like people, some bots are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. How do people find out more and about the product?
Yeah. So SurfSafe is in beta. They can go to getsurfsafe.com and download our extension there. We're working on, right now, we have this amazing community of users that are giving us so much great feedback. And if you want to be a part of this fight against fake news and help us with this product, we'd love for you to download our product at getsurfsafe.com.
Awesome.
And is it Chrome?
It's Chrome right now. We're working on a Safari, Firefox, and Opera version of the extension as well.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having us. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
We are going to do the mailbag, answer a couple of your questions. But first, I got to take a look at a soundbar from Polk. And Florence Ion and I give a review right now. Let's start with this long, giant thing that I have out there in front. This is the Polk Command Bar. This is a sound bar. If you watched my smart home tour, then you know my house was sorely missing a sound bar for great sound. And so Polk sent us this sound bar for review. It's called the Command Bar. And it is not quite as expensive as a HomePod, and neither is it as expensive as Sonos. And some might argue that it is not as good. And if you're looking at it, you can see it's $300 right now on Amazon. If you're looking at it, it looks like an Echo Dot has been dropped right there in the middle, that circle there. It's not an Echo Dot. It's not a soundbar with a hole for your Echo Dot. But it does have Amazon in it, as you can see when I said her name. As many third-party devices, you can't change the name. You can't change the wake word. So we're going to have to say the wake word and hopefully we'll mute it out if you're downloading this, if you're not watching live. So I can say play Believer.
Here's Believer by Imagine Dragons on Amazon Music.
Whoa, that's a shaky table. So it has a subwoofer here, this giganto thing, and I wish you could feel it.
Well, if you put it on the floor, I could imagine you could.
Yes. I know you could feel it. I wish you guys out there could.
Stop playing.
So if you have played music.
Heard me.
Yeah, it did hear you. If you've played music with any of these smart devices, you know that when you have it turned up loud, you're often screaming and it doesn't hear you. This one comes with a remote, which is nice.
Oh, that's good.
You can just press
admittedly, we did have a couple of issues getting it to quiet down after having it play at max volume. But I guess it's good to know that it's it works.
Mm-hmm.
It gets loud.
So let me tell you what it comes with. It comes with an HDMI connector for your TV. If you have that port, if you have just the optical port, if you have a little bit of an older TV, it comes with that set up
as
well. It's really easy to set up. There's a hole in the back for an Amazon Fire TV, if that's what you use, and you can just hook that right up there. if you know sound, if you're familiar with sound, you're familiar with Polk. They've been around forever. John was telling me about his Polk speakers that he had back in the 70s, back in the day. So they are a trusted brand. I know music aficionados say, oh, that doesn't sound as good as the Sonos. But I think it sounds just fine.
Yeah. And it's also worth noting that there are sound bars out there with the Google Assistant built in from Vizio and JBL right now. They're slowly trickling into the market. So if Amazon's not your thing, there's always a Google alternative. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there'll be plenty more by the time the holiday comes rolling around.
Yeah. So I think that this is a good buy, especially if you are fully into the Amazon ecosystem and you like to use it.
Ecosystem means a system formed by the interaction of a community of organisms with their physical environment.
You could ask questions as she just displayed. She could be listening to you. It could be listening to you when you don't want it to be listening to you. All those things. But yeah, I think it's $100 less than the Sonos Beam, which is their soundbar. So, you know, you can make that decision yourself. And I have another Polk product here. This Polk smart speaker is in your ecosystem. So I can say, hey, what's the weather?
Currently in Petaluma, it's 69 and mostly cloudy. Today, it'll be partly cloudy with a forecast.
It is cloudy. It is cloudy.
So I have found that setting up the Google Assistant on the speaker has not been very easy. And it was the same experience I had setting it up on the other third party speaker with the screen. Play music.
To hear that on YouTube, you'll need to sign up for YouTube Music.
Did you set your default in the Google Home app?
You can change your default music provider in the Google Home app.
I did that. So here's the Google Home app, if we can take a look at that. I wish that it would there we go. So here's the defaults. So I want to set the default as Google Play or Spotify. Well,
whatever you have an active account set on. If you don't have an active account on YouTube, then you should select either no default or Google Play Music, because you already have, you already have access to that through your Google account.
But not free. But
You still have some streaming. So it has streaming.
So I could say, hey, play music.
Playing some music.
There you go. See? And then it'll play it for you. You just can't be as specific as you'd want to be with the service that you pay for.
So I can't say, hey, play Believer.
You could.
That song's only available for Google Play Music subscribers.
There you go.
But try this Google Play Music Believer station.
Here's a station related to the song that you want to listen to. Mm-hmm. But because we'd like you to pay the $10 a month. At this point, at this stage of the game, you kind of expect that if you want to listen to music.
So I wouldn't recommend these devices unless you're already a YouTube subscriber or a Google Play Music subscriber. If you go to Prime or if you have Apple Music, these aren't going to be very helpful. But if you do...
Unless you have a local server of music.
That's true. But this one also, you can group multiple Chromecast-enabled speakers.
Yeah.
So if you have other ones, you can group them all together
in
multi-room sound. So if you're really into multi-room sound and having everything play the same thing, then that would be a good choice.
I am into that.
But weirdly, these are both from Polk, the soundbar and this speaker, but they can't connect to each other because that one is in the Amazon ecosystem and this one is in the Google ecosystem.
Yes. Precisely, but that's because there's one for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea.
We're just talking about our connected home here.
Yeah, it's typical conversation, Spotify versus Google Music versus Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I think a lot of people in the future will pay for multiple services.
But you had a good point that, because I said I finally, like Alex Lindsay last week convinced me, like, what's the big deal? Like, if you really like being able to tell your HomePod to play whatever you want and you really like to have your Amazon Echoes play whatever you want, why not just subscribe to Spotify and Apple Music? But you had a good point about machine learning.
Yeah, mine's not really, like, I get it. Like, I have Google Music, so I pay for YouTube Premium. which gives you Google Music. And then I also have Spotify, which I do the family plan and share it with, like, every family member I know. Just kidding. But, you know, my point is, like, I like Spotify to learn about me. So I always feel guilty when I use my Google Music because I like some of the playlists, the old songs of playlists.
Yeah.
And I feel like in those times, Spotify is not learning about me. And then it's kind of ruining the algorithm of the Discover Weekly and all those. You know, they do like 5 playlists now. Plus that old, like, they do like the 5 playlists that are custom. They do Discover Weekly. And then what's the other one? The Flashback. Which one?
Release Radar.
Oh, you got that one. And then also the Time Capsule. So, I mean, they're pretty good. Like, yeah. So anyway.
That's true. And, well, my algorithm's all mixed up with my kids, too. And not just recently. It's like what my kid, you know, what my kids liked in third or fourth grade. So, yeah.
That's the other thing. I think they should add, and I think they need to start thinking about this. There needs to be a reset button on your account.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, reset the algorithm. Like, give, you know, just start fresh.
Yeah.
You know, like, I okay, fine. I was into,
musicals.
You know, country music for a little period of my life. And now I just kind of want to wipe that.
Yeah.
It's all about electronic. What's the EDM. It's all about EDM now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, life doesn't have a reset button, Rich.
Oh, wow. That is so true. See, Spotify is teaching me life lessons.
Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I'm going to live with my past music mistakes.
With that, I think we have time for the mailbag.
Here it comes.
a gentle push. Thank you, Colleen. Oh, we got mail from Leo. He's been sending us postcards. You get one.
These are so cool.
They're Bill Atkinson's photo card, postcards. You can get one question. Okay. Leo didn't ask us any questions.
No?
Yeah. Actually, on this one, he says, please tell Rich that he answered all of those questions wrong on the Tech Guide.
Oh. Thank you. Appreciate
that,
Leo.
Say that.
Were you listening from all this, from this?
Yeah.
Is this where you're listening, Leo? Is this like actually what he's on right now? This looks amazing.
That probably was what he was on. I mean, these are his
photos.
These
are from, like, yeah. So this is this app, you basically take a picture and print it out and send a postcard with
it.
That's amazing.
It's Bill Atkinson, who worked on the first Apple computer, and he's an amazing guy, and he has this service. And, yeah, you just take a picture, and, you know, Lisa's on the stamp. Do you have Lisa on your stamp, too?
I do, right there, right in the corner. I will say, though, I would feel a little self-conscious being in this pool. Maybe it's not that great. You have to go in the pool in front of everyone.
Yeah.
So.
And then people taking pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll pass.
It's been, we're having a lot more fun than they are, don't you think?
Yeah. No. Well, of course.
All right. Do you want to answer your question? I'll start. Do we have both questions? Let's see. Which question do you have? We both have both questions. You read the first one.
I have the Echo Dot question.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll answer that one, and you can answer my question.
All right. So I will read the question for you.
Okay.
Okay? Hi. I love using my Echo Dot for listening to radio stations and your podcast here in the Sierra foothills. However, when I ask for your podcast, I can only retrieve the latest episode. Can you tell me how to retrieve previous episodes through the Dot? I do watch them via YouTube, but sometimes I just want to listen. Thanks, Don. Oh, sorry. Thanks. Don,
yes. And thanks, Don. I almost exclusively listen to podcasts through my Echo Dot. And what you can do, you ask it to play the new screensavers, and then it'll play.
What's the syntax without activating?
Play the new screensavers on TuneIn.
Okay, so you have to go through a third party.
Usually, I think it starts to learn a little bit. I can just sometimes just say play. Yeah, it's through TuneIn, but I think for certain podcast that they know that I listen to all the time, it will just play it.
Okay.
And then if you've already listened to that, then you can just say skip, and then it'll go the next one. Say you want like 3 or 4 episodes back, or 10 episodes back, or the first. I recommend a skill called Pod. What was it? Pod. Any Pod. And it's a free, obviously, Amazon Echo skill. And so you just enable AnyPod. And you can do this through the app on your phone, the Amazon app. Or you can now you can enable skills just by asking the Echo to enable skill AnyPod. And so then you could say, ask AnyPod to play the new screensavers. episode 160 or play the new screensavers episode 12. The other thing you can do...
Oh, wow, on any pod you can just call it out like specifically. That's pretty good.
The other thing you can do is you can fast forward or, you know, rewind, which you can't really do very easily. You can't do on TuneIn. So, you know, if we, if you, you wanted to get through us babbling about our smart speakers, which I recommend you not do, you can just say, fast forward 5 minutes. Or if we said something amazing, which
right,
we did a lot of.
That's what I would say. Go back.
Yeah.
Hey, let me hear that again.
Yeah, so you can say go back. And then you can subscribe through AnyPod. So you can say, you know, subscribe to the new screensavers. And do you have a podcast?
I do.
Rich on Tech?
Rich on Tech,
yeah. So you,
you can actually, I enable the flash briefing. So on me, I say, I think it's like a word, enable the Rich on Tech flash briefing. But on Google Home and also on Siri, on HomePod, it's really easy. You just say, listen to the Rich on Tech podcast.
Oh.
And I don't know, I tried it in my car today. I was trying to do like, you know, listen to it, the episode before, and it didn't really work. So, but I feel like that's the next kind of level of all these voice assistants is we, I always say like I asked you, I was like, oh, tell me how you have to say it.
Yeah.
In the future, hopefully we won't have to figure that out. You know, like you just say what you want to do.
Right.
Hey, listen to last week's episode of the new screensavers. You know what I mean? Like that's how it would be done.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So once you subscribe to all those on AnyPod, you can just say, ask AnyPod to play my podcast and it'll play them in a row. So you have a Rich on Tech flash briefing.
Yeah.
Like we do. You know, that's another thing. It's very hard to find the flash briefing skills because I constantly, I that's how my morning routine is flash briefings. And I don't have quite enough to get through the entire
morning. Oh, you
got to
add Rich on Tech.
I know. I
do. How long is your routine? Because I do mine. I have mine set up for my car, my way to work. It's 20 minutes. I actually do the Google one. So I say, hey, whatever, play the news. And you go in on your app on Google Assistant, and you actually choose your news. You guys are one of them. Your show, the This Week in Tech. No, Tech News Tonight.
Tech News Weekly.
Tech News Weekly.
Yeah,
that's the one I have. Like, it's my like that's.
Oh,
like,
that's part of your news.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but you only select shows are in there. You can't add any podcast.
Oh.
So that's like the little trick. Like your show's in there, but like other shows I want are not in there. So it's like interesting how I don't know what the delineation if Google chooses.
Yeah.
Like I can't add mine. My own to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like, I don't know how. Anyway.
Well, you should talk to Patrick, who's the master of that here.
Probably talked to Google and was like, hey, will you add this?
Yeah.
What do we do to get your show on the flash briefing?
Yeah, what can I do? Yes, exactly.
It's like in a dark room.
Yeah, so that works. Okay, now I'm going to read the question that you're going to answer. Hello. I am 58 years old and probably one of the last eight people on Earth that don't own a cell phone. I have now decided to change that. Can you recommend little tech illiterate me a cell phone? Not too expensive with the bells and whistles I need nowadays.
Oh, easy. iPhone XS Max.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, nothing but
there's
the best.
Nothing else. Yeah, you just, I mean, look. Yeah, with the 512, it's $1,450.
That's
plus
how
tax,
much you pay these days.
And I'd recommend getting the silicone case. Let's see, what else do you need?
Apple Care,
that's another $200.
Right.
Probably want a dongle because they don't include it anymore.
Right.
That's $9.
Probably a leather case. Why silicone?
Yeah, go with leather. Yeah, because it ages nicely. And leather's nice because it says, like, you know, I'm mature. You know, so it's like ages, you know, like you have a little bit. Well, he said he was 58.
Yes.
And he said he was like, what did he say, not tech literate?
No, he's not. He's tech illiterate, or so he says.
He can't be that tech literate if he's watching Twit.
That's
so I got to give him props for that.
And I just want to know how he survived without a cell phone. Like, that's crazy.
He doesn't own one at all?
He says he doesn't own a cell phone. And I kind of want to say, Mike, keep at it. Like, you might be the last one. Why not be the last one?
No, because then you also need to get the Apple Watch. Because if you fall, and Mike, you're kind of getting to that age.
Mike, you are not
you
getting
fall,
to that age.
You fall, 60 seconds, you know, the Apple Watch will take care of you. So I think you're looking at total $2,700. I think that's a pretty simple solution. Or you can, I mean, there's a couple ways. You can either, you know, if you want to do the whole iPhone thing, you can do that. They don't really make the SE anymore. You were saying you couldn't even find it refurbished?
I couldn't find it refurbished as of now. No, I got it refurbished about 6 months ago.
You might be able, I mean, I would check. I would personally, I would probably go iPhone, to be honest, like over Android. I think it's a little bit easier. And here's the thing, the unsaid thing about iPhone is that when you have a problem, you can ask people. Android, you need to have some nerdy friends, mm-hmm. right? To, like, be able to ask things. You're like, hey, how do I set up this thing in Tasker to, like, automate my, you know, now nobody's going to know how to do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With iPhone, you can ask random people, hey, how do I turn on the timer for the camera, you know? And, like, that's a big kind of plus in having that. So I say go to the Apple refurbished website, see if they have an iPhone that you like from there. Get, like, one that's not too expensive. If you don't like that Gazelle, mm-hmm. you know, you can go and you can go on there and buy a refurbished phone. I think you're looking at a refurbished iPhone.
Yeah.
And if you don't want that, what's the cheapest they're selling now? The iPhone 7, I think, is like the...
Yeah, and the 7 is also, you can get that refurbished, too, for only $375.
Okay, so, here we go. Here's the... So what do we have here? iPhone 7, look at that. 32 gig, unlocked, $379. I think that's perfect.
And that comes with a year warranty. Which is why I like, because you could get it from Gazelle. I don't remember what Gazelle's warranty is, but don't buy it from someone on eBay or
no,
Facebook or anything.
Or
like
definitely
that.
Not Craigslist. Oh my gosh. Like the last time I bought an iPod Touch on there, here's the thing. All the little listings on these sites like the eBay and the Craigslist, and I'm not knocking them because it's an amazing thing if you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you're just a mere mortal, like average person that's just buying one thing a year, it's like there's little bombs in each one of the listings. It's like you read all this stuff and it's like, oh, by the way, I dropped it, and I'm not sure if it works anymore. It's like all the way at the end.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, wait, what? So, you know, just buy it from, like, one of these reputable sellers. The other thing is the service that you go with. Mm-hmm. I think you'd probably be better served with, like, an MVNO. Like, I don't know if you need, like, the $90 AT&T or Verizon plan. I think maybe look at Sprint that always has, like, these flash sales, and it's like you can get it sometimes for $25 a month. Cricket is really good. If you're getting an unlocked phone refurbished, Cricket is a fantastic deal. Mm-hmm. It's like $35 a month. You get a couple gigs of data, and you don't have to really worry about a huge bill.
Right.
You've gone this long without a bill for your cell phone.
Yeah.
You know?
I am a proud Sprint user. I think now I don't care whether you prefer Android or Apple. I know now that I know that you would recommend Sprint, because not another... Everyone here makes fun of me when I say I have Sprint.
No, I didn't know you had Sprint. I would totally make fun of you for that. In your position. You're talking about a guy who's 58, who's never had a cell phone in his life. Anything is going to be better than what he has. He's not going to know that Sprint doesn't have service in like 99%
Sprint
of the places that you want.
Sprint is fine. I'm loyal. Like, that was my first provider, and I don't switch.
I was a huge Sprint. When they started Sprint PCS, I remember the billboards. They were clear. Mm-hmm. It was all digital. It was like the most amazing service. I was a huge Sprint user. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, I've changed over the years.
To buy the iPhone, probably, because you couldn't
buy
the iPhone.
And guess what? AT&T was the worst network. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget walking down the street in New York City after I just spent $600 or whatever it was for the original iPhone, calling my best friend, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have the new iPhone. He goes, well, that's amazing, but I can't hear you at all, so why don't you try calling me from a real phone? And I was like, you gotta be kidding. And AT&T was so bad. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten a lot better, obviously, in those years. But Sprint, his phone will not take advantage of the new network, the 600 megahertz or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think he'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, it depends. It's all about if your phone works where you work and where you live, mm-hmm. those are the two main things. And, like, obviously your drive, you know? Like, I have Verizon, and my one part where I drive home, there is a spot in L.A. where it's a dead spot, and it just drops out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my house is like that.
What?
But Megan. We don't make phone calls. Like, I'm on Wi-Fi. It's Wi-Fi calling.
Okay, we have Wi-Fi calling.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I think you can get around it.
Yeah.
Does it work here?
Yeah, it does. I'm pretty sure it does.
Very hesitant.
I don't make phone calls anymore. Like, I don't like to... It does work here, mostly. In certain conference rooms, it won't work.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. See, where I work, only T-Mobile or Verizon works. So, like, for me, like, AT&T and Sprint are, like, almost like I can't... It's like a non-starter because we have Wi-Fi at my work, but I kind of... I don't want to rely on that. You know what I mean? Like, I want my phone to have, like, strong signal, like, even without that. And it's tough. I work in a fortress. It's a studio. You know, it's like literally a fortress. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like here, it's kind of, you're in the middle of a,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
So.
But if you want an Android, by the way, let me just, one more recommendation. Name again?
Mike.
Mike, if you want an Android, my recommendation is if you're an Amazon Prime member, which you may not be because if you're 58 without a cell phone, I don't know. But the Amazon Prime exclusive phones are really good deals. So go on Amazon, search Prime exclusive cell phones. They sell them unlocked. They have some really good ones that are kind of expensive, like $400, but they have some really cheap ones that are like as low as like $35, maybe like $60.
How do they send you ads or what's the deal?
They used to. until I think there was like a lawsuit or something, and Amazon can't do that anymore. So you see this? So there you go. Moto X, fourth generation, $250. Moto G6, 32 gigs. That's a great phone. That's a fantastic phone. LG G6 Plus. Look at this. The Moto G6 Play, $189. I mean, these are great. Look at that. The Moto E, probably wouldn't recommend that one. It might be a little too low-end, but you never know. But anyway, these are always fantastic deal. So in general, if you need a secondary phone, you're in between iPhones, whatever, you know. Well, some people, they wait because there are screen cracks, and like they're literally, they'd rather go without a phone than not have an iPhone or something. Like, just get this for the meantime.
And they're not doing anything shady on tracking you or anything with that.
No, I mean, they were doing the ad thing, but they took that all off. Okay. So it's actually like a decent deal. So,
all right.
No, if you want shady tracking, you have to go with like a, what was the company? Blue Mobile?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the other thing I would, the ones in the grocery store, those can
don't
be suspect.
Don't get those. Don't get those.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've done everything we can do for you here. I wanted to tell you we have a new podcast. It's called Valley of Genius.
Yes, it's good. I listened to
the Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah.
He ate at the, what was the place he ate at that Leo like kept saying?
Yeah, barbecue, like, the Hickory Pit.
Yeah, Hickory Pit Yeah. And I tried to find it because I was in Cupertino, but I could not remember for the life of me what the name was.
Hickory Pit.
Should have just called you.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, don't ask Siri, ask Megan. It was the Hickory Pit. Yeah, I love this episode. I love Steve Wozniak. So there's lots of episodes from with hackers and founders. And Adam Fisher is an author, well-known author, and he had all these conversations that he used as the basis of his book, Valley of Genius, and he is using these interviews, and Leo and Adam chat about them and give them context, and it's a really great podcast. It's something a little slightly different than what we normally do, and I love it, and it's audio only. And you can subscribe to our Amazon Flash Briefing, as we talked about before. Subscribe to Rich's, too, because you might have different stuff than we have. And subscribe to our newsletter. Do you also have a newsletter?
You know what? I don't. I do have a book, though.
Yeah, the Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone.
Yes.
I have looked at some of your tips, and I am always a fan. It's always something that I haven't, that I didn't already know.
You know what the scariest part about writing this book was? The Amazon reviews. Because, you know, like in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, it's the greatest book ever. But I'm just like waiting, you know, don't read the YouTube comments. But you know what I mean? Like you go on Amazon and it like actually it has like great reviews. And like I knew, like I was like, I think that this is going to be good.
Yeah.
But like you never really know until you put it out there. Right. And the reviews have actually, like I just checked the other day. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're actually, like people are learning.
Yeah.
And that was my goal. Like the whole goal was just like, anyway.
Because there's so many things that the iPhone can do. And often when you just like Google like what to do with the iPhone, it's garbage.
Well, it could
garbage.
Also be outdated.
Yeah.
Like mine will be on Monday when they release iOS 12.
Right.
So I'll be rewriting my book now. Yeah. But yeah, it's one of those things that like you can find the stuff online, but sometimes it's tough. And also my audience that, you know, my KTLA audience is kind of like drive-by tech. Like they're not sitting there, they're not power Google users. Mm-hmm. Like I can figure out like what the best tip is online and like see where it is.
Right.
But like my mom can't, you know, and I wrote the book for those people.
Yeah. Did your mom read it?
My mom has Android.
Oh, interesting. But you said earlier you wouldn't get your mom Android.
No, I said I'm going to switch her now.
Oh.
Here's the thing. I got her the Pixel because she wanted the best pictures in the world. And I actually tried to switch her to an iPhone, and she said no. She goes, my pictures are too good. Mm. She goes, everyone asks me about my pictures. It's like a little thing, I guess, in like the, you know, in her world.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they're like,
interesting.
Ooh, how'd you get that?
Well,
such a good picture?
Did she have, because we have one friend in our book group who switched to the Pixel, and
you
now our
pushed them out of the group.
No, she's still in there, but it's our iMessage group is a mess.
It's not the same.
No.
I know.
No.
My wife, her like little group at work is all, you know, iPhone, iMessage, and her phone is just all day long. And for some reason, even though it still comes through, it's like an MMS, and people just get weirded out. They're like, this isn't as fun anymore.
Well, because instead of the little heart next to the message, it says, like, so-and-so loved that, or, you know, so-and-so, you know, I don't even know what the exclamation point is, but it's something that wastes my time.
It gives you, like, the whole message again. It looks like a message, but it's like the message, it's like, you know, they like, it's weird.
But I don't judge people on Android, really.
No, not at all.
Subscribe to the show, twit.tv/TNSS. And Rich is going to be back tomorrow on The Tech Guy and next weekend with Jason. And
the next weekend.
And the weekend after that. So thanks for watching, everybody.
It's been fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.